WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Ooh, is it hot out here or is it just me? Well, it's actually not just me, so why are we seeing 80-degree days in October? More and more people are starting to point fingers at climate change. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's officially fall, but you might not want to bust out the sweaters and jackets just yet. For the next couple of days, we'll be having some July-like temperatures. And if you think, well, that's just a warm fall. Well, we also had the hottest summer around the world on record this year. NASA says those hot days made wildfires worse in Canada and Hawaii and likely led to severe rainfall around the Mediterranean. At this point, 64% of adults in the U.S. have experienced extreme weather like flooding, heat waves, drought, or wildfires, and they think climate change is partly to blame. So could this major shift in public opinion turn into action? Well, to discuss, we turn to Karen Weigert, Reset Sustainability Contributor and Director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility, and Leslie Showers, Vice Chair of Chicago's new Climate Action Museum. And I started the conversation by asking them both how climate change has impacted their lives. Karen took a stab at the question first. I don't know, this may sound like a big question, but just go ahead and share what first comes to mind for you. How has climate change impacted your life?
Oh, Sasha. Well, for me, there's probably two ways to answer that question. The one is I think about it all the time when the weather is weird, and I wonder, is that climate change? But on a practical level, I'm in Chicago. We have these really hot days. They're just brutal. And that's if you have air conditioning at home. So I wonder if I'm meeting someone out, is it safe for them to be out? Are things going to be canceled? And I also worry every time it rains. Is there going to be flooding? Mm-hmm. And the rain sometimes seems to come sideways now. Is it going to come in?
Is it going to come in that way?
Yeah. So I worry about it.
Leslie, have you experienced a severe weather event?
We have. I think it is a little more personal and in my face. You know, in Uptown, we have the largest Midwest social service nonprofit service center. And our tenants have direct service to the very vulnerable population in Uptown and on the north side.
Okay.
So we get to know these people firsthand. They come in and out of our building every single day. And it's really sad when one day you say, what happened to so-and-so? Well, it was really hot outside and he passed. So I've had a couple of those events with the heat being so really hot and the cold being below zero. Mm-hmm. I've had people that I've actually known pass.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we could say that the one constant of Chicago is variability, right? Mm-hmm. But 80 degrees in October?
Yeah, it variability. I almost think of it more in volatility these days, and so it is.
That might be a better word.
Yeah, it's something we're unfortunately having to try to get used to. But volatility is hard to get used to, and it's hard to prepare. And as Leslie's talking about, it's dangerous for people across the city, and it's dangerous for people across the country who have homes that are in the way of wildfires and other disasters that we hear about. But 80 in October just reinforces that feeling of being a little unsettled. Like, is this the new normal? And what does that actually mean? And how can we make sure that everybody is able to be safe on a planet that is warming?
Tell us about that poll I mentioned earlier, Karen, from AP NORC. What are the findings?
Yeah, as you mentioned, there was polling done just recently, and it was also done before the summer, and this was the hottest summer on record. And polling shows that more adults, U.S. adults, are now connecting extreme weather and climate change. And so about two-thirds now say that climate will have or has already had a major impact in their lifetime. So those numbers are going up.
My goodness. How'd the extreme heat and flooding and wildfires affect those numbers?
They absolutely did, in part because the time sequence of when the polling was done. And the polling most recently asked about heat. And about three-quarters of the U.S. adults polled said that they have been affected by extreme heat or by heat waves. But that number, that 74% number now, was 55% in April. So you can see the impact of heat just in the way Americans are viewing this connection. And similarly, 6 in 10 adults from that same poll said that haze or smoke from the wildfires had impacted them. And that's just not something that has been in the climate conversation, at least in this part of the U.S.
So the fact that we're hearing that more people are seeing climate change as the cause for this, is that a hopeful thing?
Yeah, in the immediate answer, I would say, just think how unsettling that is. The first time someone connects these weird weather patterns to something larger, this idea of climate change, I think that's very unsettling.
I mean, for a long time, walking around, people did not know what that meant.
Right.
They would just hear the term. It's something I hear on the news.
Precisely. And now it's gone from something you could hear or you could dismiss to it's changing your actual life. What's really hopeful about it, though, is when you can identify the problem, you can take action on the problem. And the fact that we now have a majority of Americans connecting these things, that creates a platform where a majority of Americans can say, okay, what am I going to do about it? What are we going to do about it?
Leslie, scientists connected to the UN have said that though the time to act is getting shorter, that it's still possible to slow the pace of warming. So if governments and corporations across the globe act now to stop burning fossil fuels, right? How does this guide your work?
So, that, like Kieran said, there was this opinion out there that, you know, and you said, that climate change is something in the news. It's not affecting me now. But it is, and it gives us a way through, like the Climate Action Museum, of educating, because people now understand that this is a thing, it's happening to me, what can I do about it, but it's really big, can I do anything about it? The Climate Action Museum shows you how you can do something about it, and how your neighbors can do something about it, and together a community can do something about it.
Speaking of doing something, you work on decarbonizing a historic building in Uptown. Tell us about that.
I do. So we have a Chicago landmark building in Uptown. It is 166,000 square feet. And we are working right now to make that as energy efficient as possible. So we're taking on about a $23+ million renovation, deep energy retrofit of this building.
Wow. You formed a coalition of building owners who are working to make this a reality too?
Yes.
Who's involved?
So as we were doing it, we got other building owners who would come over, because we're always open, come and check out what we're doing, right, that wanted to know how we got started. And so we started with four buildings. We started with Sarah Circle, who has two affordable housing buildings, a high school, and our building. We've expanded to 12 buildings now in Uptown, and all of us together are doing this work to decarbonize our buildings. We're trying to set a date of 2040, but we do want to be realistic about it.
So in the scheme of what needs to happen, Karen, where does decarbonization of buildings sit?
Oh, Leslie's right on it. When we think about decarbonizing, if we think about it from the Chicago standpoint, the majority of emissions coming from the city of Chicago are related to buildings. It's related to heating, running, operating the buildings where we live, work, play, worship, learn. It's buildings. Now, if you look nationally, buildings are number two. Transportation's number one. But if you're really trying to decarbonize this community, you have to start with buildings. And a large building, like the one that Leslie's talking about, is a huge example of what's possible.
So, you know, the world's trying to avoid having the planet warm by 1.5 degrees Celsius, right? Why is that, Karen? And how far are we from achieving that goal?
The 1.5 Celsius target that you mentioned is the target that came out of the Paris Climate Accord in 2015. So the wording is really about trying to ensure that it doesn't exceed 2 degrees and that the aspiration is a 1.5. And these are all Celsius. So for us, those of us who live in Fahrenheit, the numbers are a little bigger. We've already warmed probably about 1.1 in terms of Celsius.
Okay.
So we're already on that trend
Sounds
of warming.
Close.
Yeah, it's a significant amount of warming, and the real question is, what's the trajectory? Are we going to be able to stave off those increases? And if you break down the numbers inside the government commitments, because the Paris Accord is really, it's a government-level commitment,
mm-hmm.
and they're voluntary, they were self-declared, but even the current commitments have the warming trending much more in the high twos in terms of increases. So those are the commitments. So there's two things. It's A, how do you increase the commitments? And B, how do you actually ensure that you deliver what you are committed to? And so when we think about the COP process and those global meetings, that's really the focus. This year's a lot of focus about getting the numbers right. It's mm-hmm. the stock take. But we are not on track to achieve that 1.5 without faster action on the ground and bigger commitments.
Yeah. Leslie, what inspired you to take action?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I've always taken action. I remember what sticks in my mind all the time is when I was very little, I was driving with my mom. A car in front of me threw out a bag of garbage. And I told her to stop. I said, stop. And I ran up to the car and I said, you dropped something. You got to get that. You know, I think I was about 12. It has, even through school, I've geared myself towards sustainability, towards taking care of the environment. It started with me with just taking care of the earth. And I tell you, when I got to the Institute of Cultural Affairs, the mission that organization had in taking care of the environment, the earth, and the people that lived in it has really pushed me to do that work.
And we're talking about extreme weather events today. Have you seen that mobilize folks in your community?
Fortunately, the Uptown community hasn't experienced the flooding, but I have for the heat events. Things have shut down. Cooling places needed to open so our neighbors would open up their stores and their buildings so that people could come in and get cool.
Yeah.
Uptown is really a warm community, and they're on it.
While I have you here, I've got to hear more about the Climate Action Museum. What is that?
So it is a museum, and I call it a conversation, actually. There's a reason why action is in that title. There are only 8 climate museums in the world,
mm-hmm.
so we are lucky to have one.
And I was excited to hear that you existed.
Yeah, right? It is a museum that came out of a exhibit that Doug Farr, a Farr Associates, had in the Chicago Architectural Center called Energy Revolution. It started as trying not to put that exhibit in the landfill. And the idea was, well, it was such a successful exhibit, why not keep it going? And we looked for a spot for this museum, found it, and with all of these other interested people, we got together and put this museum on.
Before I let you go, Karen, you know, this issue of taking action, we know it can be thorny, right? Often the responsibility gets put on individuals rather than on governments or industries. So when we're thinking about efforts to decarbonize, how can the responsibility be shared, you think, you know, and not just on me or you?
Well, I think it's great that there's a role for all of us. I think it's awesome that there's a role for us in the many roles that we play, you know, as consumers, as learners, as workers, as family members.
But I'm tired, Karen. How can you share it?
I know Leslie and I were catching about that. We're all a little tired. So yes, there's a role for us. It is also critical that there's a role for everyone. And some of those connections are, how do we as individuals send signals to companies through what we buy or don't buy? How do we as individuals send signals to the government that we have and the government that we want through voting? And then when you think about that really big picture about how do we decarbonize and how do we do it equitably, it does ultimately require every sector. So looking at federal legislation, looking at state law and legislation, looking at what the city can do, and also then looking at company commitments. So the timing here is really interesting. We just had Climate Week in New York last week. We're coming up in October. There'll be something similar in Chicago. And then after that, you have COP, which is global. So there is a role for all of us, but just like anything that happens, by yourself is never the big answer. It's with everyone else. And in this case, everyone else is every other sector. And there's lots of ways for us as individuals to see the impact directly, to reduce some carbon right here, to create some jobs right now, but then to create the market economy and the government system that can scale.
We'll leave it there for now. Karen Weigert is Reset Sustainability Contributor, and Leslie Showers is Vice Chair of the Climate Action Museum. Go check it out, folks. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Meha Ahmed and Dan Tucker. Every day we bring you conversations like this from local news happening in and around Chicago to the world. You can find more of our interviews at wbez.org/reset. Or if reading is more your thing, subscribe to our daily newsletter. You can find it in your inbox every morning at 10 a.m. from Monday to Friday. That's all for the Reset Pod. Have a great day.